Lamed Zayin, Pasik Lamed Gimel. Lamed Zayin, Lamed Gimel. So we are continuing the story of Sancheriv. Sancheriv surrounds the city. He first comes to conquer. He's then briefly sent away his army, Rav Shaki comes, and then Sancheriv comes, and then they get word that there is a rebellion in Cush and in Mitzrayim, and they go down to Cush and Mitzrayim, they conquer Cush and Mitzrayim, and then they return to conquer Yerushalayim. Now, it's interesting that was, in a way, a disguised blessing, the delay. The reason is because when they went to Cush and Mitzrayim, they conquered Cush and Mitzrayim, and they accumulated an enormous amount of wealth, of weapons, gold and silver and who knows what, and they took that with them back to Yerushalayim in their final attempt to conquer Yerushalayim. When they miraculously died, and the Bnei Yisrael, the people of Yerushalayim, they left the city and they found them dead, they were adorned with gold and silver and the booty of Cush and Mitzrayim. Had the miracle occurred immediately, the first time they came to conquer Yerushalayim, there would not have been as much spoils for the people of Yerushalayim as there were now that they went first to Mitzrayim and to Cush, wiped them out, took the enormous amount of wealth and brought it to Yerushalayim, surrounded the city, 185,000 generals. Some learned that each general had 2,000 soldiers, which comes out to 2.5 billion soldiers. It's very, very, if not impossible, to accept that literally a guzma, but it means that there were an enormous amount of, at least 185,000 generals, and they each general had under his command a number of soldiers, so whatever it means exactly, but it was an enormous army, and there was an enormous amount of booty to be looted by the Bnei Yerushalayim after this miraculous defeat. And so in a way, this delay, instead of Bnei Yisrael going to conquer other nations, here the wealth was literally brought to their footsteps. So now Hashem continues to tell Yechizkiyahu in the name of Yeshaya, the Navi, L'chein, therefore, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Koyama Hashem, Kel El Melech Ashur, so says Hashem to the king of Ashur, Lo Yavo El Ho'ir Hazos, you will not come to the city, V'lo Yorosh Sham Chetz, you will not shoot a single arrow. Below ye kadmena mogen, you will not come close with a shield. You will not. This was a technique. I once saw a documentary. I was fascinated. This is like the first time you learn things. It makes a much greater impression than when you're used to something. Is in warfare, ancient warfare, there was a technique of how soldiers would line up and they would fight with their shields. It's a big thing. The mogen David, the mogen of Shlomo. They had these very sophisticated shields. They were extremely heavy. A shield can weigh 100 pounds, made from bronze, can be made plated with gold and silver. They were adorned with the most beautiful designs. And soldiers would line up in very complex configurations, like a dance. They're very sophisticated dances, groups of people. They were very sophisticated marches with soldiers in formation, and their shields would lock one into the other. There was a technique, they would bang their shields together at certain points in time, and the sound was deafening. It would frighten their victim, the one they would want to attack. So it was an art of warfare just using shields. Forget about bows and arrows and missiles and you name it. Just the way they would march with their shields and they would attack, they would push forward into their enemy, that itself was a very sophisticated form of warfare, which today it appears is totally non-existent in modern day drones and satellites and all science fiction. What?
Cyber warfare,
that's right. And all science fiction warfare, but this is alluded to many places in Tanakh, which I think for most part we have lost the appreciation of what these words mean. When it says over here, "V'lo Yosha Milchetz," they would no one will shoot with a single arrow. "V'lo Yikadmena Magen," and no one will approach the city with a shield. Lo yishboch olecha soilala. One is soila, a ramp. A soil is a certain type of a ramp art. Ramp, different translations, where they would besiege a city, and the enemy, they would then build sophisticated ramps to go over the wall. If the wall was 20 feet high, 30 feet high, after they would siege the city, block off all entry and exit, how would they be able to attack? They would build sophisticated ramps. They would take molds, they would take boards on two sides, and set up a ramp. They would then bring in earth and fill up this mold to serve as a ramp for them to be able to march up to the top of the wall. And once you're on top of the wall, they would lower themselves, or they would attack from the top of the wall. So a solula is lashon of a road, the high road, the road that goes upwards. Go up, go on the road upwards towards the spiritual high road towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There it's used in the context of going higher spiritually. But here in a literal sense, it means a road which physically goes upwards, and refers to a road that's built, a ramp that's built against a tall wall, where the enemy uses that to overcome the wall and attack. Baderech asher bo, the road which you have come, bo yoshuv, you will return. You have the road you have come to attack Yerushalayim. You're going backwards. You're not going to accomplish anything. V'elhoir hazos lo yavo, and to this city you will not enter. Nuum Hashem, so says Hashem, you will return. This refers specifically to Sancheriv. We know that most of the soldiers, of course, died, but he and Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuzardon, and Sancheriv's two sons. There are a number of opinions in the Gemara. There are, I think, four or five opinions in the Gemara. How many people survived this miracle? According to one opinion, Rabbi Yochanan says there were five survivors: Sancheriv, his two sons, Nebuchadnezzar, who was then just an officer who would one day become the king of Babel, but at this point in time he was an officer in the army of Melech Ashur, and Nebuzardan, he was the chief executioner for Nebuchadnezzar. They survived the war. Nebuzardan ultimately became a ger. He became a ger, but Nebuzardan became a ger. So Nebuchadnezzar was in the army of Sancheriv. Nebuchadnezzar was a native Babylonian. He was from Babel. He was from Babel, not from the Kazdim. He married a woman. We learned this before on Pesach. He married, his wife was a Chaldean, but he himself was from Babel. Babel and the Kazdim the Kazdim were not the same. They were a different class. It's not clear to me exactly the difference between them. We generally, most of the time, we interchange the word with the Bavel with Kazdim. For our purposes, it's identical, but it's not the same. There are different groups, there are different classes, there are different groups of people. They were not the same. And Nebuchadnezzar was from Bavel, but that's not a question, because here in Sancheriv, that was very common in ancient times. When a king succeeded in conquering the world, he didn't give everyone new uniforms. You're now going to be conscripted into my army. We're going to retrain you, and there's going to be retooling, and everyone's going to have my insignia on your shoulder. That's not the way it worked in ancient times. The king, everyone knew who was in charge, and every single country automatically was kafa, was subordinate to the higher authority. And if the king said that the French soldiers should go and attack, they would come in wearing their flag and with their insignia on their uniforms, and they would do what they're supposed to do in the name of the Melech Ashur. It was that everyone became part of the big forces. And so here with Nebuchadnezzar was really part of Babel, but he was kafuf, he paid tribute. He was loyal, subordinate to the king of Ashur, who controlled pretty much the entire world. Entire civilized world at this point in time, and he was present, and he saw the great miracles, and he was not inspired. Adarabi, he escaped, and he took that. Nebuchadnezzar became extremely arrogant. His second command, Nebuzardan, was inspired. Eventually, it took time until the effect of what happened hit home. Eventually, he came to do tshuva at a later, much later point in time about it. Well, it's hard to understand what this really means, because this event took place 125 years before the Qumran of the Bayis Risha. So the Nebuchadnezzar, does that mean that he was 125 years old? I don't know. According to the Medrash, it says he was. Can we relate to that? I don't think we can. So what does it mean exactly? It means it was his son, his grandson. It means someone that that took his place and lived out his life as he would have lived out his life? These are very difficult questions which there is no answer for. But this is what it says in the Medrash, so you can't hold me guilty. I'm telling you what it says in the Medrash. But it was still 125 years before the event occurred. So how could he possibly have been 100 and... he had to be at least 10 years old, I assume, when he was a soldier. So he had to be 135 years old. Hard to understand.
Bavel itself is
only a 7. Right, so Bavel's rise to power is their role on the world scene as the leader was 70 years. But there's no question Bavel to some degree existed as a third world country that no one ever heard of, no one ever paid any attention to before that. Yeah, there were different nations that didn't exist and came onto the scene much, much later on. But Bavel appears to have existed as some form of a nation which no one would give a second look at this point in time. And who was the player there? It was Nebuchadnezzar. Somehow he rose to power over this period of 125 years, which again is a very, very big mystery according to the simple little translation of the Medrash. So here Hashem says to Sanherib, the same road, so he was one of the survivors, that he will survive. He, you have come on this road to attack, all of your men will die, but you will survive and you will return on the same road which you've come, and you will go back to Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of Asher. We know about Nineveh from Yonah, from Yom HaKippurim. So Nineveh is Asher, that's the nation of Asher, and that's where he came from. You will go back. Lo yavo velo yarzos, lo yavo, you will not come into this, you will return to Berech Asher bo, Asher bo, Mapakeh, the road which you have arrived on that road, Yashuv, you will return, Veloir Hazos Lo Yavo, you will not enter, Ne'um Hashem, so says Hashem, Pasik Lamed Hey, Viganosi Aloir Hazos, I will protect, beautiful word, Megan, Lashon Hagana, I will protect, Al, upon Uir Hazos, Lehoshia, Lema'ani, for my sake, Uleman, David, Avdi, for the sake of David, my servant. Now we learned last time, is that very, very powerful Rashi, it's a very significant Rashi not to forget, is that Hashem says, go back to the last possible before we, from last time, Pasuk Lamed Beis, Kinas Hashem Tzivakos Ta'asezos. The kin of Hashem will do this. Part of the great sin of Ashur was the Cherif, his Chorif and Megadef Hashem. Birchas Hashem. It was a very great Chil Hashem the way he spoke, and Hashem said that it's my kinah, my jealousy, my zeal, that will bring salvation, but not because of the merit of Bnei Yisrael. And Rashi so powerfully says, Tomo Zuchus Avos. From here we learn that it's only because of Hashem. Look in Pasuk Lamed Beis in the Rashi, Sheikani L'shmo V'loy Machma Zuchus Shebiyetchem. I will be Mekane, I will take revenge for my name, not because you have any merit. Lomanu Shetomo Zuchus Avos. The Zuchus Avos has come to an end.
Wait, this was in...
What?
Oh,
so you were
reading
this. Shetomo Zuchus Avos. The Zuchus Avos has come to an end. But yet here, it's difficult because here it says, I'm going to do so, Lamani. That makes a lot of sense, Lamani. Ulaman David Avdi. But I will do so also for the sake of David. So David, there is some Zuchus. How do we reconcile these two ideas together? By the way, there is a very important Medrash. Very boring Medrash, really, it's a Gemara. It's not a Medrash, it's a Gemara Masechet Brachos. Let me read you the entire Gemara, because this is a classic Gemara. When he was Mispalel, when Tzidkiyahu was Mispalel, to go back a few Psukim, it's a very important Limud, what exactly he said in his prayer. Let me just find the Pasuk. Tzidkiyahu's prayer. When he heard about what has happened, it was the prayer of first Yeshaya, and then it was the prayer of Chizkiyahu, and Chizkiyahu said, you have the pasuk? Vayikashmo, that's the beginning of Perek Lamed Zayin, the very beginning. Okay, the very beginning of Perek Lamed Zayin. Vayikashmo, Echamel Chizkiyahu, Vayikras Begoda, Vayiskas Pasok, Vayobes Hashem, Vayishlach. So then he sends for Yeshaya. Okay, that's first Yeshaya's prayer. And then after Yeshaya's prayer, we go further. we go further to the prayer.
Tezayin?
Okay, Tezvav and Tezayin. What do you find? Okay, Vayispalul Chizkiyahu El Hashem Leymar. Hashem Tzvakos Lekei Yisrael Yisrael Gevatahu Hu Elokim. Levatcha, okay, Luchol Mam Chosos Vatah, Sisa Yisrael Yisrael, Hatei Hashem Oznecha U Shama. Okay, so this is not the pasuk I'm referring to. That's the tefillah later on, the next parak. All right, so but in the next parak, there's going to be another tefillah. And that tefillah was said primarily when Chizkiyo got sick. We're going to learn soon that Chizkiyo, who at this time, after he heard about the imminent attack by Sancheriv upon Yerushalayim, suddenly he became deathly ill. It appeared to be a coincidence. How could these two events coincide? Here he's dealing with the greatest threat to Klal Yisrael, and there's no point in time where he's needed to lead and to care for his people, and suddenly he gets ill, and it gets worse very quickly, and Yeshayah comes and says to him, guess what, I have bad news to tell you. Hashem spoke to me 2 minutes ago, and he told me that you're going to die. You're deathly ill, and you don't have more than a day left, or something like that. And then Chizkiyah was mispalel. And when he was mispalel in the next pasuk, in the next parak, let me just jump ahead, when he told Chizkiyah that he will die, it's in pasuk gimel in parak lamed ches, we will jump ahead to parak lamed ches, pasuk gimel, vayomar, Ono Hashem Zuchor no Eis Asher His Halachti Lefanecha Be'emes. Remember my good deeds. I've walked before you with sincerity. Uvalev Shalem, a complete heart. Hatve'atoy Be'necha Sisi. I have done good things. Chazal learned that he hid the Sefer of Fools. He destroyed the Nechash HaNechoshes of Moshe Rabbeinu. He did a number of very good things. That we'll discuss when we get there. The Chizkiyahu in his lifetime was Mechadish. Certain things that no one did until his time. And here in Pasuk Gimel, in the Perek Lamed Ches, he's telling Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, I have zuchusim. Don't let me die at this critical moment in time. Look, I'm a good guy. I'm a tzaddik. Look at my good deeds. So here, the psukim are not in order. And that's brought out by the Midrashim, and we have to also take these psukim, what it says here in Sefer Yeshayah Tehillim, what it says in Sefer Melachim, and what it says in Divrei Hayamim, and add in a little spice of Midrashim, and other things here and there, and Hashem says here in response in Perek Lamed Hey, in response to Yeshayah's tefil, to Chizkiyah's tefil, which we have yet to learn, I'm not going to save it in your zuchus. It's a very powerful rebuke that Hashem is giving Chizkiyahu. I'm going to save it lema'ani uleman David avdi. So let me read you the Gemara Masech the Brachos Daf Yud. Very good Brachos coming up very very soon. The Gemara there says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, Kol Hatoyle Bischus Atzmo. Anyone that hangs, Toyle means to hang, that invokes Hakadosh Baruch Hu, asks Hakadosh Baruch Hu to save him in his own merit, Bischus Atzmo. The end is Toyle Lo Bischus Acherim. Hashem says, not a good idea. I'm not going to save you in your merit. If you're deserving to be saved, you'll be saved in the merit of someone else who has prayed for you, or has done something good on your behalf. But if a person is humble and he asks Hashem to save in the merit of someone else, then Hashem will save him in his own merit. Where do you find this? Chizkiyahu tala b'schus atzmo. Chizkiyahu asks Hashem to save him in his own merit. This is like we learned in the next parak, which really took that tefillah already took place. Zuchor no eis asher hisalachti lefanecha walk before you, and therefore, what was the response in this pasuk in Perek Lamed Zayin? Taloloi bischus acherim shenemar deganoisi esuir hazos lehoshia lemaani ulman David avdi. It's not going to be in yours. It's going to be in the schus of your great great grandfather. I've got the nothing. 14 generations before David. David was matched how many generations? 14 generations. Well, David, I'm going to save this city. Yeah.
Isn't that in a sense the schus of those?
That's the question I'm trying to bring, which I don't have an answer. It's exactly what I'm. That was very disturbing to me, because right before it says here in the pasuk, it says that Rashi says lamed shatomos chusavos. And then Hashem says, Lamani, so Lamani, that fits very well, Kines Hashem Atasa will do this. But then he says, Uvizchus David Avdi. So what's going on? We just said 1 moment ago, Hashem says, Kines Hashem Atasa. So I guess the answer is there were different degrees of salvation. And there are certain degrees of salvation which came with Kosovo, certain degrees which not. I don't know, it's very difficult. Yeah.
Well, Rav, I don't understand how the Gemara drawing a raya that a person shouldn't be misfollowed in his own merit.
Yeah.
When Hizkiyahu was misfollowed in his own merit, it's later on.
So the
right
answer
there.
Is the psukim are not in chronological order.
Okay, but what I'm
the
saying is
the tefillah already took place.
He's talking about what is he answering? Lamani, Laman.
Hashem is saying, Hashem.
He's not saying I'm going to heal you because Laman.
No, not after the healing. The healing and the salvation are intertwined. They're really one. It's true. There are two separate problems. He's ill, and they're about to be destroyed. It appears to be two, but a deeper understanding is that they're all intertwined. Being that the Melech is the Lev of Klal Yisrael. Lev Melachim, he represents the totality of the entire Klal Yisrael. His illness represents that the people, they're finished. There are no people worthy of saving them. Therefore, the Melech, there's no need for a king. If the people are healthy and observing, and there's a nation, then a nation needs a king. Then there'll be a Melech. The entire idea of Hasidus is built on this concept. Okay, I'm a Litvisha, I don't have a rebbe. But among the Hasidim, the concept is that the Hasidim, they give koyach to the rebbe. The rebbe has a koyach to do most only because the Hasidim believe in the rebbe. If you believe in your rebbe, if 1,000 people believe in you, that gives a person power. It's an idea which is a very powerful idea.
How is that different than the Litvish, though? Because what I'm saying is, one person is giving a shiur, one person is giving over something, he doesn't have anyone to talk to, where's he?
It's a belief. It's a certain blind faith that is only. It's a different mahalach. It's not. Okay, let's go further. Yeah, it's not the hashkaf.
How does this apply to us? I want to know a remiss for us. But you have somebody that's sick in your house.
Yes.
You yourself are sick. How are you supposed to do this palo? Do you rely? How do you? How should I put this? How do you say save me? Not in my own school. Or do you don't say that? I gave spelka. I did this and that. Save me before so my grandfather was dying. Is that the remnant of the Torah?
I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. I don't know the answer. I really don't. It's a very difficult question you're asking.
If you're a witch and you invoke your grandfather.
It appears that there's both.
Yeah.
The Gemara here says, you're not allowed to be misfalal in your score. So lechor, you have to understand. You don't say, Hashem, I did good things. It appears. I'm not saying anything definite. It appears that's not the proper way to be misfalal. You be misfalal, Hashem. You ask Hashem for a matnat chinam. Please help me. I'm in a dire situation. Help me. You don't say to Hashem, I'm a good guy. Look, I gave tzedakah. I did this. Do these things. Give tzedakah and do chesed. And do incredible things, but don't try to negotiate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm doing you a favor. I'm doing this, and therefore, because of this,
so
you have to do what you're supposed to do. But when you actually come to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for rachamim, ask Hashem to give rachamim matnas chinam, and Hashem on His own will look into your deeds and see that you have schusim, and then will be more inclined to give you a gift. Yeah.
Someone else you're allowed to do it though? The Gemara says, our guy says, remember there's a thing in Sanhedrin, I'm giving this whatever cell of Puta in order to heal my son.
Yeah.
And the Gemara says that's acceptable.
Yes.
So can one do that?
Yes.
See, like you said, Chas v'Shalom, a relevant is sick.
So you're asking a contradiction. You're asking me that there's a count. The one that says.
You make Misha Barrett like that all the time, right?
Look in Shema Esra, you say Shema Kolein, everything's in a plural. Then you insert your own prayer. You're invoking on behalf of the
it's correct.
Of the population, and then you're putting in your two
sentences. There's a hakpar that besoch shor chole Yisrael. Every time a person should never just misspell for himself. At the end of a tefillah for a chole, you always have to add that expression, not only this person, besoch shor chole Yisrael. There has to be both. There's definitely an element. You're asking a question. Give this. I'm giving tzedakah b'shvil sheyichya b'ni. So you see that you're negotiating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm doing you something, and I want you in return to
heal my son,
or everything should be okay. And here we're saying a person should not do that. A person should say you should not do things and say that I'm merely schusim. So how do you balance the two? First of all, the Gemara there says, I think the Gemara there says, when it comes to that there a person knows that it's not the ikkar. Because even if the person, let's say Rahman al-Islam, the child is does not have the desired results that you were trying to achieve through your prayer. Do you have harata that you gave the money? Does a person have harata? Chas v'shalom. If the money has been given to such a degree that you're holding Hashem hostage, the money is only a gift if the child lives, but if the child doesn't live, then I have harata. It's a gezel. Whoever has my money or the institution I've given the money to, I want it back. That obviously is wrong, and that's it. But if it's only, I'll have a schus. But this is not the determining factor if Hashem will accept my prayer. I don't know the answer. It's very, very difficult, obviously, in many factors. But here, this is what the Gemara here says about David. It's a very powerful passage that Hashem rejected. Hashem was giving Musa to Chizkiyahu, don't be mispal in your schus, being mispal in the schus of others. And that's what's happened to Hilaman David Avdi. Okay, let's go further. Pasik Lamid Vav. Vayetzei Malach Hashem Bayaka. So here we learn the story. Here we just summarize. We it's chased to the end. We know that he returned Sanhedrin with the soldiers, and it was the night of Pesach. There are two different opinions in the Midrashim. According to one interpretation, it was the night of the first night of Pesach. But from the Psukim it's Mashma that it was the second night of Pesach, because we learned a while back, a couple of Prakim ago, is that Hashem is going to save you in the merit of the Omer, of the waving of the Omer. And that night, Bnei Yisrael, they went, they got together, because the Omer is brought the morning of the second day of Pesach. In Eretz Yisrael, there's only one day of Pesach, it's the first day of Chol HaMoed, is when the Minchas Omer is offered. Motzoi Pesach, after the first night of Pesach is over, they would go out into the fields and they would harvest the barley in preparation for the Omer that was offered the following morning. And the Gemara says that in the Zchus that the Bnei Yisrael were involved in preparing the Omer for the Minchas Omer the following morning, Hashem performed the miracle and wiped out the soldiers of Sancheriv. So there are two opinions in Chazal when this miracle occurred. Did it occur the first night of Pesach, or did it occur the second night of Pesach? We refer to this either or in one of the Pizmonim in the Haggadah by the Seder, Vayihi b'chatzi halayla. This took place at midnight, and one of the miracles in our history took place at midnight was this event of the death of what this pasuk says here, Vayetzei Malach Hashem Vayakeh b'machane Ashur Mea u'shmoinim v'chamisha olef, 185,000 soldiers, Vayashkimu v'boker. The survivors woke up in the morning. Who were the survivors? It immediately refers to the five people that survived, or Bnei Yisrael when they went outside. V'hinei chulam, all of them, pigarim meisim, were dead corpses. Their bodies were intact. There were different opinions of the Gemara. We had the Psukim. There were different opinions. Either their bodies were burnt, or their clothing were intact. It was a miracle. Either their clothing were perfectly preserved, but their skin was charred. How in the world can it possibly be that you can char someone's skin, and the only way the skin can be charred is through being put in a furnace, and yet the clothing remained perfectly intact? It's a miracle. Or some say that their bodies were perfectly, but their neshamos were burnt. And then there's the similarity, the comparison between Nadav Aviu. Nadav Aviu, it was an ish, but there it's different. By Nadav Aviu, a fire went into their nostrils and removed their neshama, and the neshama went to Shamayim. Here, a fire went into their nostrils and destroyed their neshamas. It burned their neshamas. Their neshamas were destroyed.
It's like the neutron bomb. Just kills the people, leaves the buildings.
And leaves the building? I'm not sure. Okay. So this is what now. Why were there? Why did they remain with their clothing? So we know there's a very famous Chazal. Everyone knows it's a child because of Noach, the children of Noach, who was Sancheriv. He was a descendant of Chom, Shem, Chom, and Yefes, and because Yefes, he took the garment. Achoranis, they saw their ancestor, they saw their father Noach was uncovered. After the Mabel Noach, he planted a vineyard and he drank from the wine. He became intoxicated and he was lying without clothing in public. And their children came Shem and Yefes came, they took a garment and they walked backwards to cover their father. Because Yefes had compassion on the shame of his father and he covered the father's body, that's why his descendants, the sons of Yefes, which were Asher, married them when they died, their bodies, their clothing remained intact. They married Kavura, burial, and their bodies were covered, at least in a dignified way, not just to be totally burnt to a crisp and in a way, derech b'zayim.
So, I thought Asher was a descendant of Shem.
Asher was the son of Shem. I'm not sure. I believe. Maybe I'm confused. I could be right, but I believe this was a reward for this deed. Okay, whatever the deed, the details maybe have to be worked out. I'm making a mistake, but the reward that their clothing was preserved and their bodies were preserved, and there was a degree of dignity in their death, was in reward for their ancestor Shame and Yefes, who did this act of chesed of covering their father when he was in a state of bizayon.
A way you could die, burn up literally, and your body and clothes being intact, is you die of a fever. And I think there's a Goyishim thing that I read one time, that they had just come from Egypt, and there's some kind of evidence that they were attacked. They used to have straw shields, and they were attacked by mice or rodents that had fleas that caused bubonic plague.
Uh-huh.
This is the thing
that killed
them over here and burnt them up internally from fever.
From the fever, very interesting, yeah. There's always a mahalach, when we talk about Nisan.
Yeah, there's always a
natural approach also to the Nes. Like you have by Yitzias, even Kriyas Yamsaf, the tsunami. Like until recent modern times, what is a tsunami? Who ever heard of this word? Tsunami. Most of us never heard this word. So now we understand what a tsunami is. And you can understand how Derech Teva, that's an approach. Obviously, there are many approaches in Chazal how to understand Nisim, the time, all the various Nisim. Okay, so now we go to Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayisa vayelech vayosha. This is Sancheirif, three words. It's very perplexing. What are these three words? Vayisa vayelech vayosha. We discussed many times, we only have three words, which seem to be the same thing, different stages. Sancheirif found himself now at a very difficult point in his life. His army, 185,000 soldiers representing the best, the elite of the world, that were entrusted under his control by the nations of the world. He is in a lot of trouble. How is he going to explain this to Bavel? These are young men. These were all children. I mean, they were adults, but how is he going to explain to the kings of all the nations of the world that your son and your grandson and your brother and your nephew are all dead? They'll kill him. They'll kill him when they get word that he here had under his control 185,000 of the best that this world had to offer, and they're all dead. He obviously was, his life was threatened. He did not know what to do. So he very reluctantly, in a very roundabout way, and that's why there are three words in this pasuk, Vayisa, Vayelech, Vayoshav, there are three different expressions. Somehow he made his way back home to Nineveh in a very complex, over a period of time. Sancheirif, Melech Ashur, Vayesha, Beninveh, and he returned to Nineveh. What happened in Nineveh? Vayehi, Hu Mishtachaveh, Beis Nisroch Elohav. We discussed this once, that he was bowing down to the god called Nisroch. There is no such god anywhere in Tanakh called Nisroch, and we discussed this a while back, that he adopted a new religion. He came across a board from the Teva of Noach. It could very well be that this fits very well with that the Noach, because we're going back to Sancheirif, that the form of death, that their clothing remained intact and their bodies were burnt, was a reward for the children of Noach. And here he's worshipping a board that came from the Teva of Noach. So somehow he was very inspired, Sancheirif, from this miracle to attribute to learn Parshas Noach. And he was inspired. What?
I mean, first of all, everybody knew the Noach story. Everybody
it was fresh in their minds. Right.
It's in other religions, in other.
In every culture, every culture has a
they're still trying to find the Teva today.
Yeah, and And really, maybe it's kind of a worship of the the god of survivors.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. Because this word
also Sancheiro captured what's called Anatolia.
Yeah.
And Anatolia is
with the Irats.
Looking for
the Teva Irats.
Right. Just like Homer.
Okay. Nechai, we also took one of the boards to the table. There's a medrash what that means. According to modern scientists, they say there's no way a piece of wood can last. They hold derech teva. It's just not possible. Today, all they have the stories. Every so often, you hear in the news, they're explorers. They know where the teva is, and they found the remnants. Al derech teva is a scientist, a real professional who knows carbon dating and who knows how these things work. It's not possible for a piece of wood from the time of the marble should remain intact in the year 2012 in our century. It's just not shaykh. Okay, so you'll say the conditions, the climate, the so and so is still possible. All right, fine. But here it says in the Medrash, Nisroch comes from a neser. That's the shorash of the word Nisroch, because we don't find anywhere in the entire Tanakh a god called Nisroch. There are many gods. There are definitely many gods, pagan gods, all over Tanakh.
You can make
a whole sefer, a whole encyclopedia, and all different gods. But there is no god called Nisroch, and therefore they use this as a reference to refer to the word the Shoshu Nisroch Neser. He found the board, Elohav of his god. At this point, he went and he figured the god of survival, like you said, and he decided that since Noach survived the marble, so it must be there was some type of god. He took a board and he worshipped this board. Again, as we said before, it fits very well into the previous part that the death, the way they died, was a reminder of the act of the survival of Noah, how his children cared for him, they had compassion on his disgrace after the event of the marble. So he found this board, Elohav v'adar melech v'sar etzer bonov. Now, in Sefer Melachim, the word bonov does not appear. It's a kriv sif. And the reason was because not everyone knew they were his children because they were illegitimate. It appeared that these two children were not his children. They were just his soldiers. They were just his chief of staff and his prime minister, whatever they were. But the truth was they were really his sons. Why were they his sons? Because he had extramarital affairs. And he knew this, but not the public did not know this. So these were illegitimate children, and they were his two sons, and they overheard their father say to this piece of wood that let me fill you with the Medrash. The Medrash is that he heard that the reason why Hashem has done this miracle for the Jewish people and allowed them to survive and caused all of the soldiers to die was the merit of Avraham Avinu. And so he asked, what did Avraham Avinu do that was so great that his children deserved such a miraculous salvation? And he was told, Avraham offered his only child Yitzchak as an offering to Hashem at the Akedah. So he said, if that's the case, I will outdo Avraham. I will offer two children. So when the two children heard about this, they said, no, you're not. we'll offer you as a sacrifice, not us. And that's what they did. So when they got word of this, Ve'adar Melech, Ve'sar Etzer Bonav, he called the Hin Bacherev, Ve'hema Nimutu, and they escaped to Eretz Ararot, because that's where the Teva was. Vayimloch, and who took his place? Esar Chadon, Beno Tachtav. This appears to be a different son. He took his place. He ruled in his place of father. He became the new king of Ashur. But Ashur's influence on the world already had begun to wane. And in a short period of time, the new power that would rise, it was all downhill from here, would be Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Babel. He would take the place. There's a lot more. Mitzvah will pick up this up tomorrow.